Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper, deeper, deeper. I am your host, Adrian Webber, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Little John Riley.
Just give me a bow staff.
Eh?
I'll knock you over the head.
Eh?
Eh? I'm Canadian, eh?
And that's a new entry into that folklore. And Spencer.
Well, they turned him into everything else, so.
That's true. And Spencer. Yeah! Williams.
I find that offensive.
Wow, I did not see that coming.
Why would you? It's a Robin Hood podcast.
Oh, I love it.
We got a great show in store. As Spencer mentioned, we are going to be talking about the recently released film, Robin Hood. So stick around. But before we do, Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of that opening credits?
Yeah, if you're disillusioned by the amount of money you have to pay in taxes each year, there's at least one thing that you don't have to be anxious about. The Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you duty-free, courtesy of Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios.
That means you can travel abroad.
Yeah, and not pay tax on it. Build up your arsenal of movie knowledge by subscribing to The Filmlosophers on any of your favorite streaming platforms. We release new lessons from our quiver each Wednesday morning on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
See, Spence, we did okay last time when we did the Grindelwald copy, but this is why we have Chad on.
He's got the voice.
He's got
he
the magic.
Pull it off.
Go ahead, Spence.
We're raising up a band of merry men and women, and you've been recruited. Follow us, follow the Filmlosophers on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. That's right, no need to sneak off into Sherwood Forest for this crew. Finally, if you like what you hear in today's episode, there's nothing stopping you from accessing hours and hours of other great content. Our episode archive is available on filmlosophers.com and contains nearly 140 episodes.
That's right. We're almost there. We're literally, this is lesson 139. We are one away from 140. We'll get there.
It's pretty exciting.
That is exciting. We have been around for 139 episodes. Well, currently, when this debuts, we had been around for 139 episodes weekly for the last 2.5 years. I'd say, I mean, hey, we're having a good time here. We've got something going. I think we should keep it going.
I mean, we haven't failed.
That's true. That's very true.
Silver lining.
Well, speaking of silver linings, let's talk about the taxes that are getting taken away in the film Robin Hood. We, like I said, it just recently got dropped this past weekend, and it's been in the theaters for a week. Or for
like
a weekend.
A few days. Since Wednesday. So, yeah, about a week.
It's got a lot of mixed reviews. There's a lot of people who are kind of up in arms in terms of trying to really give their opinion and whatnot. And so we figured we'd throw our own hat into that ring.
Okay, but let's be fair.
Okay.
Ralph Breaks the Internet and Creed 2 both had record-breaking Thanksgiving holiday weekends. And then Robin Hood was like the other one.
The child that we do not speak of.
So, I don't know. I mean, maybe. Yeah, some of the criticism still holds water, so we'll get into it.
Yeah, most definitely. So, as we jump into this, Chad, give him that official synopsis goodness.
I'd love to. Robin of Locksley, played this time around by Taron Egerton, a war-hardened crusader, and his Moorish soldier friend, whose son he tried to save, played by Jamie Foxx, mount an audacious revolt against the corrupt English crown in a thrilling action-adventure packed with gritty battlefield exploits, mind-blowing fight choreography, and a timeless romance. Can I just say I have problems with most of that description?
And here's the thing.
Which I believe was supplied to us by the studio.
It was supplied by the studio, Summit Entertainment. I went directly to the site, got the information from there, and put it in here. Right away, I need to work on reading this stuff before I put it in there, because it said some other things prior to this that was like, yeah, that's not right.
Yeah, originally it said that Jamie Foxx's character was Robin's commander, his Moorish commander, and it's like, that is 100% inaccurate.
Yep, they're really changing the storyline.
Not revolting in this particular telling. They're not really revolting against the English crown. They're specifically revolting against the sheriff himself, which, it cuts both ways, but still. There's just timeless romance. from the source material, but in this film, I don't know.
Directed by Otto Bathurst, this film stars Taron Egerton, Jamie Foxx, Ben Mendelsohn, Eve Hewson, Tim Minchin, and Jamie Dornan. The film actually was released. Its release is marked 110 years after the very first Robin Hood film, Robin Hood and His Merry Men, which debuted in 1908. Interesting fact about the film, the ancient techniques of speed shooting from the draw hand and the double draw are all used in this film throughout the entirety of it. So if you're unaware, the techniques that are used in the actual film, and we'll dive a little more deeper into this as the film goes on, but the techniques they actually utilized are legitimate techniques.
So basically the stunt choreographers did their research and everybody else kind of just winged it.
100%. Wait. another cool little piece of information. The film's set and costume designers got instructions to make everything one-third historically correct, one-third contemporary, and one-third futuristic to get the movie's unique
look. Oh, well,
look.
That explains some stuff. Because I was watching this film, and I was freaking out over people's clothes. I was like, no, this doesn't make any sense. This looks super anachronistic. Like, this, the sheriff of Nottingham is wearing this leather jacket that if anyone else wore now would look totally in place with, like, contemporary clothing. It looks so off to me.
I love how fired up he got just for this. Like, seriously, I'm looking at the levels and everything is like peaked out.
Oh my God.
I'm excited. Spencer's ready to be unleashed.
So
I think it does bear mentioning that unlike what we typically will do, which is go to a press screening of a film, we opted for, we did the same thing that audiences did.
True.
We opted to watch Ralph Breaks the Internet 100%. For the press screening instead of Robin Hood. So we all separately went and saw the movie. What that adds for you, dear listener, is the equal component of us not knowing what each other thinks about this film.
100%.
Like, we haven't spoken about this in any detail or length until right now when we're recording.
We've actually kind of kept each other at bay in terms of revealing any kinds of personal thoughts or opinions on the film thus far. So that way, what you're getting is literally the true, honest conversation that we were having, the first true, honest conversation we've all had about the film.
Now, I will say, with regard to the sets and the costumes and stuff like that, with the whole mixing and matching, you know, ancient and contemporary and futuristic, you know, influences, I'm okay with that because if you ever have gone to like a live stream of one of the Met Opera performances through Fathom Events, you'll notice, like, obviously operas get redone routinely. Yeah. Shakespeare gets redone routinely. Certain musicals get redone routinely. Greek plays get done routinely. So what a lot of artisans will do is they will change up, like they will make, you know, a Shakespeare play set in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Or they'll make an opera that's set in the year 2027 and, you know, it's all futuristic, but the storyline is the same.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have people, artisans that play with things. I would say in this case, the visual appearance of the film was interesting to me from the trailers, and seems to be kind of in that vein where it's like we're not going for 100% quote unquote historical accuracy, because the first references to Robin Hood are from like balladeer songs in the 14th century. So it's not like this was a recorded historical figure and we have to stay true to the exact time period within, you know, which the story first appeared. It has been expanded, embellished upon, elements have been changed. We've had numerous iterations, even just in contemporary times. I mean, since, what did you say, 110 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, Robin Hood and His Merry Men as a film. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there have been a dozen films. There have been half a dozen TV shows. There have been book series. I'm sitting here with a stack in front of me.
There's literally a stack of books on the table. Look, hold on. You can't really hear, but those are books, just so you know.
That's not all of them either.
Those are just some of the books that Chad has brought to the table.
It's like half
literally
of them.
And figuratively to bring to the conversation.
I love the story of Robin Hood. I love King Arthur. I love Robin Hood. There are a number of others, you know, from classic literature or whatever. But Yeah, so basically the story's been told and told and told and told and told again. So I don't mind the taking of artistic liberties here and there. But it was, I agree with you, Spencer, it was very almost disjointed in the sense of like you actually start the film in a like very gritty, in the moment, pseudo historic thing, and then suddenly you have these costumes appearing and set design and everything that's like, wait a minute, when is this?
Yeah.
So let me just go ahead and state real quick before we can jump right into this. This is going to be a spoiler review. So we do plan on giving information. Obviously, we do tasteful spoiler reviews. So we talk about things that are pertinent to the conversation, but we're not going to reveal how the film ends or details that will ruin the experience for you. But there are certain aspects of the film that I think we need to talk about. And honestly, I don't really think many people will be surprised. Like you stated, the story has been told for as long as since the 1400s. A lot of people know of the story of Robin Hood or have heard a variation, whether or not if it's in a film, a live action film, a cartoon film, on TV, you know, however, what medium you watch it in, video games, I'm pretty sure you have some familiarity with the story. So things that we talk about won't probably be too much of a surprise, but fair warning, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I mean, you've had a few days to go see this movie. We know that you didn't because hardly anybody did. But, I mean, you know, you can deal with it.
So, before we begin, jumping right into expectations, I want to kind of start with Spence. I want to know, seeing as Spence is this powder keg that is ready to blow, I kind of want to just, like, gently brush off the top so we can kind of get things moving a bit, and I want to hear Spencer's expectations coming into this film.
Okay.
Oi.
I saw...
I'm glad you wore your red shirt today, by the way, because you are really ready to go.
Okay, so I saw like a brief snippet of Taron Egerton like showing off like some of his like archery skills that he's learned from like the movie,
and I was snap!
Which they say is legit.
Yeah.
Like he's actually really good.
Which is interesting because I actually saw this.
I saw that. And I was like, oh, okay, that I'll look forward to. But that's pretty much the only thing I really like had coming into this movie with. Because like I didn't remember the trailer, and every time I try to think of Robin Hood, I start to think about King Arthur instead. So that didn't really help. But now I'm going to expand into my viewing experience because it kind of negatively affected how I view this movie. So I
love how Spencer's so charged up. He's like, I can't just stick to this question. I've got to plow forward.
Like his hands just really jumped out and started.
This might be the most animated we've ever seen him.
True. Let me jump on the levels here just in case you get loud.
All right.
Go for it.
This
unleash.
Is talking about the audience I saw it with.
Oh.
Sometimes when we go to see...
There was an
together,
audience where you were?
Yeah, there were some people in there.
There was three people in my theater.
There was
just
too
many.
It was too many. Well, there's one person too many. I was sitting next to like the most annoying person I have ever seen a movie with. He came like 5 minutes late. He was on his phone initially, and I was about to say something to him, but then he put it away, and then he just starts laughing throughout the movie. And I'm not talking about like laughing at like, you know, parts that are like kind of funny or something. Like he's laughing at literally nothing. And like I'm like reviewing scenes in my head while this person's laughing. I'm like, what on earth are you laughing about? I don't understand. Like that's not even a failed joke. That's not even a joke. What I was losing my mind during this movie. And then, like, I think I got kind of angry about it. And then I kind of fell asleep for, like, like a little bit during the end of this movie. So, like, there's a bit of the movie that I did not see because of laughing guy. And I got frustrated of being there with him. And I
just checked out.
I just wanted a little break. And that was my experience viewing this movie. And
so this is what happens. Spencer,
when
you decide to go see the movie without me.
Don't.
Because you know.
Yep, we all know.
You know. I would have said something.
Yes, you would have.
So it's funny that you say that. Because, so let me just address your particular situation before I go into my expectations.
Okay.
There was literally, I can count them in my head, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people in my theater, in a whole theater with assigned seating, mind you. So I had to pick a seat out of this entire sea of other chairs, and there was only 9 people. There was a couple at the very front of the that second section where like the bar is, and like there's like people who have disabilities can go sit in the seats right in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the seats right behind it. As soon as the trailer started going, this man's voice carried throughout the entire theater. The acoustics were sound and perfect in that theater because his voice not only traveled all around me, but it traveled right next to me. I will never sit in H13 again, just so you know. And so I thought maybe they're just talking during the trailer. I will give them a break. I will allow that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Trailers went through. We get on the roller coaster. If you've been to the movie theaters.
We get on the roller coaster. Yeah.
The Regal roller coaster.
The Regal roller coaster. I got on the roller coaster. They're talking still. I'm thinking, well, surely his other half, the female in attendance with him, will turn to him and tell him something. Nope. She responded right back. And her voice was shrill and echoed just as much. We get to the opening part of the film. It's the, you know, studio logo and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, all right, I will give him that. They're probably winding down. They'll be done. We get to the movie. The moment I see Taron Egerton on the screen and I hear him talking, I almost jump out of my chair and go, shh. I'm shaking from pent up frustration for not saying anything through the 25 minutes of trailers.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a quick second and be the last thing that's not about the movie. What is happening with trailers? There are way too many. Like, I was just sitting there for like half an hour. Like, what?
The worst thing about it is you don't know when they're going to end. Like, 100%. You don't know how many there are going to be.
Well, and that's not the worst part. The worst part about it now is they're having commercials in between trailers.
Yeah, they
so
do
now,
that.
If there's a trailer of like Universal movies, then they'll do like a Universal push. If you get three tickets for these three movies, you can own them yourself. Go through the Universal app, blah, 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 blah. Or whatever, Lionsgate or whatever. It's like, I don't need commercials between my trailers. If I wanted that, I'll just stay home and watch TV. But...
Right, not to mention that all the trailers are available online, so
yeah,
you kind of don't need them anyway. I mean, I understand. They have a purpose. Some people don't go looking for them online. They're not podcasters like us, but still, you can find them.
Either way, I was a hair's breadth away from throwing a packet of salt at these
people. I really wish that I would have been there with you, because I've been with you in many a film where you do shush people, For those of you who don't know, like, we're talking anyone from like the age of 2 and above. Like, he will shush a child. He has no shame about it. He's like, this is a movie. We all paid to be here.
I did not pay for your commentary. I did not pay for you to be talking alongside Samuel L. Jackson. I want to hear my movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I full confession, I wanted to throw a packet of salt at this guy, and I ended up just throwing it on the floor, and it broke, and I heard it, and it...
Hashtag salty.
So, yeah.
I like it.
So that's Spencer, high five. We had the same experience,
yay.
But I take it back, because then we should have gone together and I could have shushed your person and you could have shushed mine.
I'm not going to shush.
The question is, did you fall asleep during part of the movie?
I did not. As you
interesting.
Know,
I did.
What part was it? I want to know what it was.
Well, okay.
Full disclosure, your fiance told me you did, and she said that I needed to get on you for that.
Okay. So I actually had a well-behaved crowd. The theater was actually full where we were. Granted, we saw it Saturday evening, so it was a great, like, it was, people had been out shopping for Black Friday and Small Business Saturday and whatever, and they just wanted a break. And so, and it was a small theater. There were maybe 30 seats. So we were up near the screen. Because I didn't think people would be there. We waited until we got to the theater to get tickets and buy the seats. So, well, boo-boo on me, right? So we're up against the screen, fully reclined in the chairs in order to see the screen. Because otherwise, you've got no hope. I almost fell asleep 5 different times. My fiance and I were holding hands. And she felt every time that I let my hand would jerk when I would wake myself back up.
Yeah.
And then when I finally ultimately fell asleep, it was at the beginning of the final battle. So
And
it was a long time coming. I'd been trying to fall asleep the whole time, which is odd for me because I love Robin Hood stories.
When she said that to me earlier, she had mentioned, she's like, you need to get on Chad because he fell asleep during the movie. And I'm like, wait, no, are you sure? Because this is his jam.
Like for minutes, and plural she's like, minutes.
She's like, I know. And I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, she wasn't the one begging to see the movie. That was me. And then here I am snoozing.
There you go. Expectations, though, real quick. I'm in the same boat as Spencer, just going to be honest and short. I expected the King Arthur Legend of the Sword movie done again in just the Robin Hood fashion. It looked like it had a similar color palette. It looked like it was very much in the same vein as that one, although that one was done by Guy Ritchie. This is by someone named Otto Brathurst. I had no idea who the heck Otto was, and but either way, my mindset was the bar is set really low right now. As I was sitting in the theater, I'm like, this movie cannot go lower than the bar I have set. Because it's a sad thing to say, but I didn't really dig the King Arthur movie. I know Chad is a huge fan of it because he likes the mythos, he likes the story, he likes iterations of that tale. I, on the other hand, I wasn't really enthralled by the logistical aspects of it. Like, I think that's
there what was a it lot about that film that didn't work. You can hear more about how we felt about the movie in lesson 63.
Shabang!
On filmlossifers.com.
So yeah, that was my full expectation. Honestly, I did see the same clip that Spencer was talking about on YouTube, mm-hmm. and I actually texted it to the team, and I was like, you know what? I'm actually kind of anxious. I wouldn't mind seeing it a little bit more because of that YouTube clip. And so, other than that and hoping it wasn't going to be another King Arthur movie, that was all I had. So I step aside from the altar and I give Chad the floor. Brother Chad, tell us what your expectations were.
Okay. I wanted so much for this movie. I am a huge fan of Robin Hood, mm-hmm. the character. I have seen many of the iterations, not all of them. But many of the iterations, I watched the whole BBC series on replay here in America. I have a costume because years ago, I was a volunteer with a youth ministry at a church in the area where I lived at the time. And many of the kids were also fans of BBC Robin Hood. I don't know why, but they were. And I was. And so we did actually a Christmas party that was BBC Robin Hood themed. So I handmade a homemade costume as one of the merry men in Sherwood Forest. So I was stained it with tea and it was, dirty and whatever. But it was cool looking. I still have it. But it wasn't for Halloween. So that's like my level of devotion. I really enjoy it. Most recently, from what I can recall, the 2010 Ridley Scott film starring Russell Crowe and Cate Blanchett was the most recent Robin Hood retelling that I remember seeing. And I do have a collection of books. I have the King Raven trilogy by Stephen Lawhead. I've got all five or six books in the Outlaw series by Angus Donald, which I have not actually made all the way through. But suffice to say, I'm a fanboy. When it comes to Robin Hood, I think it's a great story, redistributing wealth that is unfairly taken in the first place, right? Like, take the money back, give it back to the people who really, really need it. And if it makes you an outlaw, so be it. Like, there's something really appealing about, fighting for the underdog and being the underdog and all of that, but being clever enough not to be caught. And I was thinking, well, every other time that we've seen Taron Egerton, it's been kind of hit or miss for me. I enjoy him as a performer, but the stories that he's in, I'm not always a fan of. The Kingsman duology at this point. Most recently, The Golden Circle, which is lesson 80.
I was going to look that up, and I knew it right as soon as I looked at my laptop. I'm like, nah, Chad probably has it already on hand.
Already here. But it was a very mixed review because... Yeah. The whole tone of the story, a lot of the pieces and components, Elton John, I don't know what was going on. But we really enjoyed Eddie the Eagle.
Yes, we did.
Hugh Jackman. He was good. Hugh Jackman was phenomenal. It was a really fun ride. And so I'm like, okay, so I know he has it in him to be likable and tell a good story. And here, you know, I also saw the featurette about his ability with the bow and arrow,
mm-hmm.
and how they, yeah, they had to train him, but like it wasn't as though they had to put all the arrows on guide wires to make sure it looked like they flew straight. Like he can actually accurately aim and pretty fast,
mm-hmm.
like the character. So I was like, okay, good. So there's this blend of like, you know, man and machine and whatever, like the tool that he's using. The actor does many of his own stunts with regard to shooting the arrows. I thought that was cool. Obviously, yeah. Jamie Foxx for me usually is a hit. Sometimes he's a miss. I really enjoyed him, even though I didn't like the character in Baby Driver.
I was just going to say.
Less than 69. But I wasn't sure. Like, I didn't like him as Electro in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I thought that was a mess. The movie as a whole, but also specifically him. It was just a mess for me. It didn't work. So, you know, but then, like, Ray, I thought he deserved all the award accolades that he got.
Oh, yeah.
And awards themselves. So, there was a good mix of elements. I was a fan of the aesthetic and the movement and motion of King Arthur Legend of the Sword, which is the Guy Ritchie film from a couple years ago. I did not like the sorcery component with Jude Law and, you know, the mage wizardry thing. Like, that's...
Yeah.
It's derivative of things that are part of the Arthur mythos, but it really didn't fit. And it ruined the movie from a storytelling standpoint for me.
For me.
You know, but I'm like, okay, if they take... The pacing and the cut sequences and whatever, that kind of energy and vibe from the Guy Ritchie film, and then they take Robin Hood and a guy who can actually shoot a bow and arrow, okay, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah.
So I was hopeful going into the theater, and then I almost fell asleep five times, and then I did fall asleep at the final battle. So
it's yes.
There were some things that didn't really pan out the way I wanted them to.
Well, as as Chad said, he fell asleep. Spencer said he fell asleep. I fortunately did not fall asleep. I just happened to, I can't fall asleep in movies. It's one of those weird things. So jumping right into the film and the review of it, like we said, spoiler alert. So you've been warned. As the film begins, you are introduced to the main components of this Robin Hood mythos, if you will. You're introduced to Robin Locksley, Robin of Locksley, and you're introduced to Maid Marian right away. The film does follow a lot of the same beats that you would expect in terms of the origin, if you will, of Robin Hood, how he was a son of a rich nobleman. He gets sent to war. He once had a love in Maid Marian. He's sent to the fight the Crusades for King. I forget who the king is.
Richard. Originally, it was Richard the Lionheart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. And comes back finding out that his family's riches and whatnot have been stripped away due to the taxing of the Sheriff of Nottingham. That's ultimately the basic premise, if you will. Through the course of that opening opening segment, you're introduced to Taron Egerton as Robin Hood, or Robin, Maid Marian, who's played by Eve Hewson. You're introduced to Ben Mendelsohn as the medieval bad guy from Ready Player One, because he looked exactly the same with the gray suit.
Like, unfortunately, they've got him as like a one-note player.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's... He's the bad guy from Ready Player One. Quite frankly, he's kind of the bad guy from Rogue One.
That's true. Yeah.
Especially with regard to his costuming, which is very similar to what it was in Rogue One.
And he really walk out of one movie and into the next.
Like,
movie.
He doesn't
notice.
Do anything to really differentiate himself as a performer, which is surprising.
Other than talk with the British accent, which he didn't have in Rogue One or in Ready Player One. But in this one, he just in terms of differences, mind you, it's not a big deal breaker. Like, ah, he's more menacing now that he speaks with a British accent. No, it's just he's that's one of the main differences, honestly.
An attempt was made.
We're also introduced to Jamie Foxx's character, which you come to find out if you didn't read through the IMDb or look at any of the cast information, he plays Little John. which is a departure from what the normal story usually has been, where Little John is a fellow individual who is of Nottingham, who lives in Sherwood Forest.
Yeah, he's British and
yeah,
very tall, big like a tree, you know.
Whereas in this one, I don't really... Do they actually state that Jamie Foxx's character is Moorish, or is he just Arabic?
I think it's easy to assume. I don't know that they outright say he's a Moor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, given the context that you usually find surrounding the Robin Hood, the introduction of the Robin Hood story, I think it's very safe to assume.
And another interesting turnabout in terms of this story is, as opposed to Robin being a skilled archer prior to being the skilled archer that he's known for prior to becoming the Hood or Robin Hood, he actually learns his skill in this film through the teachings and the lessons given by Little John, i.e. Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. Well, and they only ever call him John.
They only ever call him John. That's right.
Well, he has a longer name that's difficult to pronounce, so he says, in your tongue, it's John.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody calls him by.
We're also introduced to, as I said, Maid Marian. Or not Maid. She's Marian.
Yeah, she's not got the maid part in front of...
Mm-mm.
Ever.
No.
Nope.
And we're also introduced to Will Scarlet, which I was hoping that it said Will, like, I don't ever remember them mentioning his last name in the film, but I had to look on the cast listing. I'm like making sure, is he listed as Will Scarlet? Because they just call him Will. I don't really remember a time where they actually call him or address him by his last name. And sad to say, my full knowledge of the character of Will Scarlet is Christian Slater. And sadly, that's from the Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
As far as like the mythology of Robin Hood goes, that entry can be largely ignored.
We'll talk about that in a second. You're also introduced to Friar Tuck, who is obviously a big aid to Robin's, you know, endeavors and his escapades as robbing the rich.
And I believe he's the narrator of the story overall. You actually hear his voice. You don't know who it is.
No.
You hear his voice before you really see anything. The very beginning of the film, basically, I don't remember the exact dialogue, but you've got the voice of Friar Tuck saying, essentially, you think you know Robin Hood's story, but really you don't. It's going to start and end in a place that you don't expect. And it's going to start with a thief, and that thief is not Robin. Because as we see in this telling, the thief is Marian. She's coming to take a horse out of the Loxley Estate stable.
Mm-hmm. And so these are kind of the key players that you're introduced to. These are the people who you will be seeing a lot as the film's storyline is progressed. One thing to note, you have to appreciate the investment done by Taron Egerton as the in terms of the practicality of utilizing actual skills as an archer, as opposed to keeping everything 100% CGI. I'm more than certain there are plenty of scenes in this film that are done through CGI, but the fact that he actually took the time, I think it stated 18 months, to train how to utilize a bow and arrow, how to perform archery. Given that, you have to appreciate and respect the fact that somebody who puts in that much time and effort really wants his character to truly be believable. And you got to give him that. I mean, no matter how he does in terms of performance-wise, the fact that he's put in that much work, I'll give him that, you know?
I mean, it really does sell the swagger, because in this version, he's got plenty of swagger. But the fact that he's actually doing a lot of the stunt work, okay, that's legit.
Yeah, 100%.
No, that's like one of the best parts of the movie for me. It's just him firing off arrows, because he can do it quickly, and it looks really good.
Yeah. Well, and you have him, you have Jamie Foxx, I believe, who also did some of his own stunt work. Not too much, but he put in some time as well with the bow and arrow. To see the fact that a film is willing to make that investment, as opposed to creating everything through CG, which, mind you, would probably have taken less time, would probably have probably cost less. Safety-wise, it probably would have diminished any worry or concern for any stunt person. But the fact remains is that you take this step, you take this risk, you're introducing a character who is normally considered probably one of the best fictional archers in all of literature, film, and whatnot. I mean, anybody. And you ultimately put the investment in there of utilizing practicality and practical mm-hmm. effects with that and the work. That takes a lot of, you know, risk, and that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. And I think, honestly, with this particular character, he plays it off well. I mean, he does it well.
Yeah, there's a lot that like the nuts and bolts of the story are there. They're recognizable, and the parts that you're used to working mm-hmm. work. Yeah. I think one of the things that they leaned into a little bit too hard. I mean, essentially, Robin Hood, as a figure, is one of your earliest archetypes for the character type that we eventually see in Batman, right? Like, yeah. You've got a character in a cowl, striking at night and administering his own version of justice, right? And he's known by his alias, not by his real name. So his real name, his real identity remains a secret. Mm-hmm. And that's very much an indelible part of the Robin Hood mythology. So he goes by Robin Hood, but that wasn't his given name. So Robin of Locksley becomes the Hood in this case, in this mm-hmm. film, in many of the story, you know, telling of the story. But I think here, the filmmakers decided through that like blended costume angle and set design. I mean, basically there's like a Vegas casino vibe at one point in this yeah. movie that's sort of like, where are we exactly? It's I would say like the 1/3 contemporary is fully in that scene. Like that scene is yeah. almost entirely contemporary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't have much of the historical, and it doesn't really have much of the futuristic either. And so it kind of, it's a moment that if you've been kind of going with the flow of the film and absorbing the costumes and whatever, when you get to that scene, you're stuck. Like you get jolted out of the moment and it's like, wait a minute, is this Bruce Wayne at like a Gotham casino? Is that what's happening here? Yeah. Am I going to see Batman in the next sequence? Like you really legitimately get a little confused.
Oh, 100%.
Because it's not like a, you know, 1/3, 1/3, 1/3 throughout all of the proceedings. Mm-mm. Like the opening sequence is almost entirely, let's call it history in scare quotes, right? Like
yeah.
with regard to Robin is part of a special unit of archers trying to infiltrate a city in like, I don't remember where during the Crusades. And it's played as a very like, almost like Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty mm-hmm. kind of vibe. And it's very dusty and gritty and older feeling.
Yeah. But even then too, just to kind of interject real quick, the way they looked, like they literally looked like soldiers nowadays, like the way their vests look,
yeah.
the way they were dressed, the way they were all like in formation. It very much seemed, even the way it was filmed, it seemed like one of those modern war type of films where you see people like on covert missions, you know, running through the narrow corridors of this place and that place to find the target or whatever. That, like the shooting style and the way that looked, that seemed modern. Everything else aesthetically seemed very more historically mm-hmm. based. But like the way they looked, I looked at it, I'm like, oh man, like this looks like something straight out of like Sniper or something. I don't know. It just really
yeah, no, it is. And but then you get to the casino scene, which is, I don't know, roughly halfway through.
And that's a complete bust.
And it's like it happened yesterday, you know, like
mm-hmm. yeah.
And it was a costume party. Mm-hmm. So there's like some kind of old fabrics maybe, but yeah. like the costume design is modern. Like it's just
yeah.
And it really pulls you out of the narrative because you're thinking, oh, this is like today.
There was one woman in particular who had a hat. It was black and it was just, no, the second I saw that I was like,
I love how fired up he's getting.
You do not get to do this. That is too modern. You grab that off of some store shelf.
Go back to the Kentucky Derby right now.
Yeah, like that was the part where like I just like that did pull me out of the movie a lot right there because I'm like, did we jump forward and I wasn't paying attention because of Laffy McGee next to me? Like,
well, and you've got touches like Marion, for example. She's not Maid Marion. She's Marion. She has her own agency, her own vibe. She's very standoffish, which works for a modern audience. But like, there are times when she's vocally, publicly denouncing the sheriff's speech while he's giving it.
Yeah.
And it's like, back in the day, though, she would have been arrested and tried as a witch or something. Yeah. But they just are like, shh. And then he keeps talking. Like, it's completely, it skews so modern in terms of its tone.
Yeah.
That you're, the part of your brain that, like, went to history class and maybe paid attention and or has seen some of the other films in, you know, the in the library of Robin Hood, you know, classics.
Yeah.
Like, you're sitting there thinking, wait a minute, aren't they going to, like, arrest her? Aren't, like, and not because she, like, oh, she's a woman, she shouldn't speak up and she deserves to be arrested, but because, like, during the time period this is supposed to be set, that would not have just been lightly shushed and or just, like, vaguely ignored and talked over. Yeah. They would have intervened. Even if it was a guy, even if it was a well-to-do aristocrat who interrupted the leader's speech to the people, like, there would be consequences beyond what you see in the film.
Well, and in terms of inconsistencies, there's even a scene where the friar says something out of sorts in the presence of the, what is he, the deacon of the church?
Oh, the cardinal.
The cardinal. Mm-hmm. Well, before, prior to.
Oh.
The
bald dude?
Yeah, right next to the sheriff. And as soon as the deacon is out of, like, he says something that can, it's not even meant to be rude. It's just a matter-of-fact statement that he's making. And as soon as the deacon is gone, the sheriff, like, turns around and grabs him and, like, starts threatening him. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a decent response. Like, I would understand that, like, almost to the point where, like, okay, he's going to send him to the dungeon, or he's going to send him to jail, or he's going to send him somewhere for speaking out of sorts. But then you get instances like what you were talking about, Chad, where Marion's speaking out of sorts, and it's a direct public, it's in public, and it's completely defiant to what the sheriff is saying.
Yeah, she belittles him
100%.
To his face in front of everyone.
Even at the ridiculous party that we were just talking about,
right,
where Marion, so one of the unique aspects of the story that happens when Robin returns is you come to find out that he was pronounced dead years prior to, so Marion moved on and she ended up getting into a relationship with Will Scarlet. So that is the interesting dynamic shift there, but they apparently are these outspoken individuals of their community, and they get invited to this unique soiree, and right in front of all these other important people, I would assume, from the kingdom and the community and whatnot, she is still speaking out in defiance to him.
Yeah.
In the presence of his peers. And that kind of also throws you a little bit, because you're like, okay, well, that wouldn't stand in my mind.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't, but it definitely start to finish in this film, you get the sense of like, well, no, we have a plot and we're trying to follow the plot. And whether or not the internal logic of the character relationships truly makes sense and holds water the whole time is a secondary concern to moving the plot forward. And so you get things like, I don't know, John is a Moor. He is like an enemy of the state, and he's parading around in front of people all the time. He interrupts Robin during like a funeral service. And he's like, come over here, like in the middle of like a service.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, number one, he should be afraid for his life that he's even there. He should be skulking in a corner, not standing in a beam of sunlight, and he should not be interrupting and have nobody talk about it. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's sort of like, does he have like a cloak of invisibility? Do people just not see him somehow?
Especially if he's from the other country.
I mean, he's got facial branding that is a part of his appearance. He's like, it's hard to believe that he would just saunter around the way that he does, and nobody, and he would be seen with Robin of Loxley, and nobody would ever put two and two together. Like, ever.
He is the getaway driver for just about every one of his, one of Robin Hood's little nightly escapades, and nobody has fingered him in terms of like, oh, that's the guy who's always driving around the hood. And he's always with Robin of Locksley.
And Robin and the hood showed up at the same time. They're both archers. Like, Robin gets fabulous amounts of money from who knows where because his entire estate was seized.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't understand why the sheriff didn't question that at all. It's like, oh, you've got money. That's great. Like, didn't you impound most of his wealth while he was gone? Where's this coming from? This is before Benny's. Yeah,
he sold his boots. He sold his boots from...
Yeah, there's just a lot of basic logic that doesn't work.
And it's interesting to notice, like, obviously throughout the course of history, we've had a lot of, well, we've had 110 years of different variations of the film. Like we mentioned, the one back in 1908 that was done, the black and white film of Robin Hood. You have one of the most famous variations of it, which is the 1938 Errol Flynn Robin Hood film. That's the one that everybody always references back to whenever they talk about like the classic Robin Hood tales. And then you get more into the latter years. You get into the more comical, whether directly or indirectly, projects such as Robin Hood Men in Tights, the one that everybody loves, Carrie Ills, and so forth. And then you have...
Hey, don't forget the Disney Robin Hood.
Oh, that's right.
That one's awesome.
The 1960s
with the
Robin
anthropomorphic
Hood.
Animal versions, yeah.
The fantastic Mr. Fox who plays the archer, and Maid Marian who plays the other fox. Or the fox who plays Maid Marian. That's just a hodgepodge of mess. That's like crazy...
It's like, got like a football scene in it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And then you get
the archery contest, which I really wanted to be in this movie, and it's not. I'm like, if Taron Egerton can actually shoot a bow and arrow, have him do the archery contest scene. 100%. And they didn't.
Yeah. See him have an arrow that flies through the air and gets another arrow and shoots it down to make sure it lands. I like that cartoon. Either way. And then you also have the other comical film, the other comical Robin Hood, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, starring Kevin Costner and Morgan Freeman.
Which was not filmed as a comedy, but it's easy to laugh at sometimes.
The Englishman who had no accent.
Talk about distracting from the first moment he opens his mouth.
Oh, my Lord. Everybody else in the film was ridiculous. Although, and I was telling Chad this prior too, even though Chad had only seen very few minutes of the film.
I turned it off after 8 minutes, people, and I haven't gone back, and I don't want to.
Alan Rickman is the best friggin' thing in that movie. The fact that the only reason why Alan Rickman took it was the director promised him that he could have pretty much, he could say whatever he wants in most of the scenes. He told him he could ad lib as much as he wants. The scene where he's threatening everybody to double taxes and doing this and that, and then he turns and he says, "And I'm canceling Christmas." That was ad libbed, and that is so hilarious. The fact that Alan Rickman, God rest his soul, Alan Rickman was a great actor, and unfortunately he was placed in that film. But needless to say, I adored his version of his variation of Sheriff of Nottingham. But then even more recent, you have the 2010 Robin Hood film starring Russell Crowe and Cate Blanchett, which was actually directed by Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott is an incredible visual director, and so having him do this classic tale, it was actually a really good piece. Oscar Isaac's in it as well, right?
He is, yeah. He's Prince John.
There you go. I knew he was one of those guys.
Which is different from Little John. There's Prince John, who's the brother of Richard, King Richard, and then in that one, they go all the way through to where Richard the Lionheart dies and John becomes king after him and whatnot. But yeah, Oscar Isaac was John, the prince and then king,
and
the bad guy.
There are actual variations of the actual tale that I'm not familiar with, but I know you are, including like the BBC series and some of the novels. And why don't you tell us about those, a couple of those?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the more that the character persists in the popular consciousness, the more shading and nuance and depth and context creators tend to put around him. So over the years, you've got Robin, and you've got Friar Tuck, and you've got Little John, and Will Scarlet, and you've got Alan Adale, and you've got Maid Marian, obviously, the Sheriff of Nottingham, and Guy of Gisborne, who then is sometimes the sheriff and sometimes is not the sheriff, or was and gets defeated and then the real sheriff comes, or was under the sheriff and then becomes sheriff after the sheriff is gone. Like, there's just a whole variety of interactions that the characters go through. So in this telling, Guy of Gisborne is the commander of Robin's unit,
mm-hmm. played by Paul Anderson.
And then he comes back and kind of leads the shock troops of Nottingham, if you will.
So just a quick question. So that character actually has roots within the original story, the guy of...
Not the original, but the story's been told and expanded since like the early 1300s or the mid 1300s. Mm-hmm. So it's had some time to percolate and and develop complexity of flavor. So actually the BBC Robin Hood, Guy of Gisborne, was played by, what's his name? Blue Eyes. He was the main dwarf in the Hobbit films. He was
the guy.
He was the Hydra soldier in the first Avenger that bites his tooth and foams at the mouth. And
Richard Armitage.
Thank you. So that was the first place that I saw Richard Armitage. Was he was the bad guy. I mean, he was Guy Gisborne. So who was not the sheriff. He was the sheriff's main henchman, and then I think over time he ended up becoming the sheriff in like series 4 or something. So you've got other women aside from Marion who come into the story in and out of the story, and so you've got different elements. The King Raven trilogy in the books by Stephen Lawhead, which I really enjoy. He is a big fan of Celtic mythology, so he brings in a lot of like Celtic symbolism and figures and all that. Sometimes you've got Will Scarlet as a traitor who comes back to the fold. Sometimes he stays a traitor. Sometimes he's never a traitor at all, and somebody else is because they know you're expecting it to be Will, so they make it somebody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, different creators play with the puzzle pieces in slightly different variations from time to time.
And that's, that's kind of where the brunt of
this is the first that we've seen Will Scarlet brandishing a Molotov cocktail.
100%.
Never been seen to my knowledge before.
The way this film structures its story is very unique because it promises at the very beginning, as Chad mentioned, it promises it's going to be a tale that you're not familiar with. Now, the issue in terms of that statement is that the story itself is not unique. It's the way that the filmmaker decides to allow this to expound and just kind of be executed, because like Chad said, there's Molotov cocktails involved in this. There are underground heists that are involved in this. There are explosives and explosions and unique ways that I'm not too sure the structure of most of the buildings back then were that easily destroyed. I don't know. There was a lot that was happening within the film that I'm like, you're really stretching that believability here, buddy. But you look at the flow of the story, and the film carries a lot of the same notes that you would expect for any hero coming from a place of recognizing the need, jumping into the place of need and filling it out and finding out that the real heroes of this story are not the one man, but the people. You know, it follows a lot of that same story structure. Would you agree, Spence?
Sure.
Spence is about to fall asleep here. But I don't know. Spence, you've read a lot of comic books. You've read a lot of books. You've seen a lot of movies. How does that resonate with you in terms of like this story compared to other hero journey stories like that? Like, do you think this film was unique on its own? Do you think it actually is just another kind of knockoff to all the other ones? Or is this something that holds true to like to the classic tale?
Well, that's a really tough question.
That's why I gave it to you, buddy.
Because watching this movie has really asked the question to me of what do I even know about Robin Hood? And really, I think it comes down to just that Disney movie.
As Chad hands him a book.
Here you go. You read this.
Yeah, so for me, it pretty much is the story I'm familiar with. Like, you've got certain people in slightly different roles or people I haven't heard of before, but it's basically the same story. It's just told in a way that is a bit distracting. So I found it a bit odd.
Is it unique, though, in terms of what it's offering? Like, for me, I wouldn't say this film is unique in the way, like, it's a brand new, like, take on the Robin Hood story. I think it's still a lot of the same beats that we're used to. It just tries to implement a lot more modern aspects of it, like the Molotov cocktail, or the rapid fire, not the one that Robin uses, but the rapid fire, like, bow and arrow, like, bolt gun that they had. It was ridiculous. Like, oh my gosh, if that's what people had during war that time, I'm surprised anybody made it out alive.
Right.
Like, this, like, thing, like, but knowing that it took those beats, like going back to what I said at the beginning, I still applaud them for taking the effort and putting in the time and the research that they did for the historical aspects. The futuristic and modern perspectives, however, that they took for this film, I could have done with a little less.
I could have done without them completely.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because unless you know going into the movie that it's going to be about that, it's moderately distracting. Like, if you're the type of person to, like, look for logic in your movies.
Which you are.
Yes, I am. So
100%.
Like, so I find it mildly distracting if, like, you know, there's just elements or, like, hints of things that shouldn't quite be in a story set in, like, this time frame. Even if you're being kind of generous, it just it distracts from, like, the overall experience of, like, actually watching the movie. And then you just start nitpicking at it. And it's like, well, why is this person doing this? Why isn't the sheriff, like, shutting these people down? Because he seems like he'd be a type of authoritative person to stop them.
In a way, it's sort of like... I'm going to take a liberty here. And
by all means.
Hopefully it gets a bit of a laugh. In a way, it's like, to go back to the Batman well.
Okay.
It's like we've lived through all these iterations. We've lived through Michael Keaton. We've lived through Val Kilmer. We've lived through George Clooney. We've lived through Christian Bale in the Christopher Nolan. We've lived through Batfleck. Mm-hmm. Sad Batfleck.
Sad Batfleck.
And so now it's sort of like, okay, you guys... we're going to do Batman like you've never seen before. We are going to update the swag factor of Adam West. We're going to take the Adam West Batman and do it as a modern swagger thing. And the problem with it is you have something that is maybe visually appealing. It has some distinctiveness if they put the pows and the whammos and the zap and the whatever in it.
Yeah.
But it lacks all the substance that represents the evolution of the character in the popular consciousness. And I would say that's my main gripe with this film as well. They've put so much swagger into it with the pacing, the fight choreography, the costumes, the set design, and they've deleted so much of the substance that makes the story work. That it's like, okay, I don't know. Like, spoiler alert, you don't get to see the entrance to Sherwood Forest until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
It's sort of like this film is going to set up a series, right? Which that's not going to work because it made almost $0. I mean, we contributed like $30 over the weekend.
That's true.
But like, it's not going to get a sequel. And so to have deleted certain weighty elements of the story in favor of the glitz and the glamour and the like eye candy bits, you know, you leave the theater feeling like, I've seen this done better. Like more than once I've seen it done better. Maybe it didn't look as cool and slick
or
in the other
or
versions, but the story's been told better multiple other times.
And I have to agree with that. Like, even going back to things like, I know Chad has an issue with it, but going back to Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the element as to how much they, in terms of aesthetically, the way it looked according to the period, the way they dressed according to the period, the way things were Like the protocol and procedure, even though it was a little stiff and was difficult, and you know, with certain actors and actresses in that film, the fact that they still created the right environment and they understood the happenings and the protocol of the time and focused in on that, you give them that. You got to give them that. That film has that on this one. Yeah. Even comical, intentional comical variations of it, going back to Robin Hood Men in Tights. You know, there's even the joke that Cary Elwes has in the film where, you know, all you know, instead of other ones, like, you know, oh, but I speak with a British accent. It's like, oh, that's hilarious, but it's funny, and the aesthetic is still on point. It makes plenty of jokes at its own expense, but it never steers so far away from the focus of the film that, like, oh, well, while we're doing all this, we're also going to make sure that, you know, oh, there's a modern variation of this, and we're going to keep it running through the entire film. It may be a joke here or there, but it's not a running theme.
Yeah.
This film takes so much liberty in the mindset of creating this altered, you know, atmosphere aesthetic where everything is historical / modern / futuristic. It's like a schizophrenic atmosphere. Like, you don't know what it's trying to be. You don't know. Like, I'm looking at the jackets that they're wearing and the clothes and probably the hat that Spencer was talking about earlier, or even the scene. I'm watching the scene of the little casino thing that they're doing, and I'm like, were those games really around then? Or were they, like, what is... It looked like a steampunk party to me. Like, it didn't seem like it was a variation of something that would happen during the time. Mm-hmm. It looked like something that would happen at a comic convention nearby, or, you know, at the steampunk festival that's in San Francisco or something. Like, that kind of stuff seems to pull you incredibly quickly right out of the film because it wants you to notice. It's that child that's screaming, notice me, as opposed to what you're there to actually see, which is the overall film and experience the story. I found myself being called away from the story so many times because it was telling me, the film was telling me, oh, notice this, notice that, notice my hat, Spence, notice the way I dress for this, notice the way I looked here, notice the way this looks there.
I noticed that hat.
I'm glad you noticed that hat. So, I mean, mind you, you take into account the director, whom has had a lot of small screen successes. He's done a few episodes. He did an episode of
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. He did a few episodes of a couple of decent shows, you know, here and there. So you got to give him credit. The man knows his way around a camera, and he knows how to create engaging storytelling. The problem here is that he wanted to reach so far into creating that bridge between the modern and the classic, and with the, you know, current audiences and the then people who understand and recognize the classic tales and love the classic tales. And that bridge just doesn't exist. Let's just be honest. You're either a fan of that or you're a fan of the variations. I adore Robin Hood Men in Tights. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
There are purists to the story who adore these books here that Chad here has here, or the classic story, and they abhor that because they'd rather stick to something more to the story.
Quote unquote realistic.
Exactly.
Even though he's always been a fictional character.
Such as like the 2010, you know, Robin Hood film with Russell Crowe we were mentioning. And that's okay.
Which is much more historically rooted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you can't create that bridge, though. You can't try to get people to... You can't be the mediator and say, oh, well, I'm going to give something for everybody. Because then you just find yourself, you know, sitting on a fence with nobody around.
Well, and you have to... Like, you have to do something that... If you're going to do something different, at the very least, you have to do something really good. And you have to do something that adds to the story. Like... I think an attempt was made here. There's a bit of nuance to the exact scheme that the Sheriff of Nottingham has going on that is not exactly in line with the traditional, like, the reason why the people are being taxed. In this version of the story, he's essentially... You're led to believe that he's conspiring with the church to tax the people to pay for an army of Moors and Saracens to keep fighting the Crusaders.
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is that they will kill the king overseas, and those who are vying for power back in jolly old England will be better positioned to take over as warlords, which is a diabolical plan, and it 100%. Is it is a different version of what the Sheriff of Nottingham is typically doing. He's really typically just lining his own pockets. That's what it's pretty cut and dry, pretty simple. But here it's a lot more sinister. However, you never really meet or have reference to Richard the Lionheart. You never meet Prince John, or if he is king by now, King John. You don't have any like support for where Nottingham fits in the overall like hierarchy of England in terms of, is it one of the main cities? Is it one of the secondary cities? Is it a poor area? You don't really know. The church is not painted very well at all in this telling of the story, aside from Friar Tuck, because he's always a sympathetic character, and in this case happens to be our narrator. But, you know, there's a lot that's sort of devious, and it's planted there and then not followed through on. And the fact that the sheriff is such a dunce about Robin of Locksley and the Hood, like, he's basically wearing a sign on his head that says, "I am the Hood, and I'm kissing your butt so that you won't notice." And the sheriff, who's otherwise so sinister, so devious, and quote-unquote cunning, is a total moron. Like, it again, it's one of those things, aside from the costumes, it pulls you out of the story. You're like, no, you really, dude, you can't be that dumb. Like, you can't.
And it's interesting that you say that, because like we mentioned, so two things. Like we mentioned earlier, Ben Mendelsohn, unfortunately, kind of is getting pigeonholed for these particular roles, which, I mean, mind you, he's great at. I mean, he does the devious, you know, figurehead of the nefarious organization, whatever they may be. And in this case, he's the person who is enacting the will of the cardinal, who wants all this to transpire in terms of, like, the shift of power to the church so they can take over everything. The problem is that just like in Ready Player One, he's not a very, like, he's so used to playing off of, as a character, his character is so used to playing off of his strengths and his money and his ability, all these other things, that they lose a little bit on the brains, and he's not given much to work with. Now, secondly, the film actually makes fun of itself in terms of that, when there's a scene towards the end, which I'm assuming is the scene that both of you guys fell asleep in. There's a scene towards the end where in that last battle where he's riding away on this big wagon with John and Marion. He had just saved Marion, and Marion hears his voice and is like, "Oh my gosh, that's Robin." And so when he breaks her out of the little containment that she's in, she looks at him and she's like, "Robin?" And he's like, "How'd you know it was me?" She's like, "You're just wearing a scarf over your face. How could I not recognize you?" And he's like, "Well, I fooled everybody else." And it's like, that's the disbelief that you just broke. Like, she recognized you. Is everybody else playing dumb? Like, is everybody else just along for the ride? Like, oh, let him be. Like, he's really just a struggling individual. We need to give him this. It's like, she recognized him. She knew him for a few years prior too. It's not a very long amount of time from the beginning where he first meets Marion to the time that he's drafted into the war.
Right.
So there's not much time to get so familiar with somebody that it's like, oh, I recognize his face and blah, blah, blah. Things are just recognizable like
that. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like they needed to do something akin to like Christian Bale in The Prestige or something. Like, they're Robin of Locksley and the Hood are just way too similar all the time, especially because John is always with them. Yeah. Like, Jamie Foxx's John. Like, that's like Alfred walking around with Batman and walking around with Bruce Wayne. Yeah. Like, you'd be an idiot if you didn't put two and two together. They're definitely all movies to a certain degree call us to suspend our disbelief and go with the flow. However, that shouldn't necessarily be like for the characters in the story.
No.
Like,
and that immediately pulls you out, like, any sense of like, okay, maybe there's some believability to this. That statement alone blows every bit of credibility to the amount of disbelief that you have to, you know, abstain from within this film. You're like, oh, so it is that obvious. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. Like, to kind of move a little bit forward, just because we're running out of time, jumping into to some of the things that I just wanted to mention, like, you have to give credit. So to Taryn, who puts in that work, one of the things that's unique about the film, and I mentioned earlier, the archery style that he uses is actually an age-old form of archery. So the rapid quick-fire usage of the bow and arrow, it's actually been popularized as of late by a YouTuber by the name of Lars Anderson. So Lars is a Russian archer who has pretty much mastered the ability of quickfire on YouTube. So if you ever go to his YouTube page, he's always showing how he can do like 4 or 5 different arrows at one singular time. And he is quick. Now, mind you, the film does take certain liberties within that and uses CG and some time enhancing to kind of show like this rapid, like, machine gun quickfire. That's a little bit too hard to kind of believe.
Elf did it with snowballs.
Yeah, but I could actually... No, I'm just kidding. but to say that they actually went in depth into looking at this man and seeing this age-old style of like holding 3 to 4 different arrows in your hand and just one right after another, shoot, pull back, shoot, pull back, shoot, pull back, shoot. Even the idea of having the arrow on the outside of the bow is a part of that understanding, that technique. So, because normally when you use a bow and arrow, you want to have the arrow on the inside of the bow, so that way you can be able to keep hold of where it's going to be.
Something that our loyal listeners might not be aware of is that you, for many years, have had an affinity for archery.
Yeah.
You have owned bows and arrows, you've shot at targets, etc. So you not only have a respect and appreciation for it, but you do have some knowledge about how it all works.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, one of the things for me about, you know, just the idea of having something that can be used not only in defense and offense, but even in just the aspect of just the beauty of it in terms of bow and arrow, being able to wield something like that has always been one of those fascinations for me. A timeless weapon, if you will.
Yeah.
The ability to create an immense amount of pressure and force within this small, thin piece of wood. The logistics of it, the engineer in me goes giddy for it. So the idea of learning it and understanding it and then knowing about this prior to, I had heard about this speed technique way back when. Obviously, I wasn't going to try it because then I probably would have shot my eye out. But the idea that it's possible and that it was something that actually was used in wartime during those former years and whatnot, it's incredible. And knowing that there are people who are now, you know, mastering that is beyond belief, just because I have a hard enough time pulling back one arrow and making it work, whereas this person is pulling back 3 to 4 arrows in like rapid succession. So knowing how much work is needed to put into it, knowing how much force nowadays you have certain bows that have counterweights and whatnot, so it makes it easier for the pull, and then when the release, there's a lot more convenience added to it. Back then, all you had was what was called a recurve, which is just literally a strong piece of wood and a piece of intestines that ran down the center of it that you used to pull back and over and over. And the pull on those was like up to what?
No, I was listening to what you're saying, because like I've shot a recurve bow before. Mm-hmm. I'm like, those are hard.
Yeah. The recurve bows are legitimately probably one of the more difficult ones, because as opposed to the other bows that lock into place, a recurve, you're pulling against force, and you're pulling against probably about 120, 130 pounds of force being pulled back.
Every time.
So somebody who's able to do that in rapid succession with a bow, with something nearly that force, you're looking at strength in the, you know, magnitude of like somebody who's like a bodybuilder or something, because you have to constantly pull back and release, pull back and release. Mm-hmm. And not only are you pulling back and releasing, but you're also aiming, you're also having the finesse of being able to be on target. A moving target. It's insane. So knowing that Taron Egerton actually put in that work, and I mean, maybe not everything that he did in the film was exactly him, but recognizing that he took the time to learn it and even master it. I mean, there are people that are saying that the video that he shot, that he did for the behind the scenes, it's almost like Olympic worthy. Like if he actually wanted to take it somewhere, he could.
That would be wild after playing an Olympic skier.
Yeah. And then
like if he actually did join like the British Olympic archery team, that would be pretty meta.
That would be pretty meta. But like I wanted to just in terms of like thoughts and whatnot after the fact, I wanted to kind of highlight that because you have to appreciate anybody who puts in that kind of a work, especially with something that is so unique as learning how to properly shoot an arrow and do it in rapid succession like that technique that they showed. What about you, Spence? Was there anything that you wanted to highlight? Any issues? Anything that you really didn't like, did like, aside from what you stated and Mr. Laughable that was next to you?
No, I've gotten most of my complaints and praises out.
Oh. Chadley.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts? Any issues? Anything that you wanted to highlight?
I'd say from abroad, like a 30,000 foot view, I'd say I wanted something better than what I got. Mm. I'm a big fan of this type of story, the character overall. I thought in the trailers and everything, like the swagger and the costume design and all the blending of modern look, but then the classic story, like I thought that could be really fun. The Guy Ritchie style pacing and tone, I was looking forward to. I think it's very safe to say that this is not as refined and enjoyable as it would have been under Guy Ritchie's care.
Yeah.
It tries. There again, an attempt was made. Yeah. Some things play better than others. I think if we had a better story that took a little more time developing the characters and helping them not just be chess pieces on a board, I think that would help a lot to balance all the flashiness without having things like a casino scene that distracts you out of the period of the movie and you're not sure what you're watching anymore.
Yeah.
Or a Molotov cocktail. Like, fine, put the Molotov cocktail in there, but like, don't have the shock troops look like modern day police officers with riot gear. Like, fine, like do some elements, but don't go all the way in on the modernism bit.
Yeah,
because then I forget that I'm watching a Robin Hood movie, and I'm not sure if you're trying to be like,
yeah, exactly.
Are you commenting on the state of current events?
Exactly.
Am I supposed to be paying attention to this movie in a different way than I am? The end result, I think, is no. Like, it's not actually a political commentary. It could be. Robin Hood is very much an everyman kind of a hero.
Mm-hmm.
He's more devious than Spider-Man, but like, Spider-Man is an everyman character. Yeah. Robin Hood very much appeals to the masses. That's why he's been popular for 700 years.
Yeah.
You know, in fits and starts. So, you know, there are reasons why the character has persisted. I'm not sure they really bottled that lightning again here, because overall you're watching it thinking, am I supposed to be getting a deeper message or a deeper meaning out of it? No, actually, I'm just supposed to sit back and not use my brain.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go ahead and jump down to the end result of this. And if it's been a while, which it has been a while, I just keep reminding us, we do pass or fail these films, whether or not how well they did to our likings and our standards, and how many monocles we give it out of 5. I'm going to go ahead and start with Spencer, because I can't wait to hear what this man in red has to say. Mm. Does it pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Yeah, it passes. There's too much effort in this for me to fail it. Because, you know,
it's like, well, they tried. Give them a participation trophy.
Like, they really did try. If I can say one thing about this movie, is that they actually did try to do something here. I don't think it worked very well in most parts. So I will just give this movie 2.5 out of 5.
Okay. Chad? Or how about this? I'll give Chad the last one because I know he's going to have the better word to say than both of us. The film passes for me. I really actually kind of enjoyed some of the scenes that came out through the film. A lot of recognizing that a lot of the work that was put into it, and the fact that, you know, maybe this scene was done through practical effect. Maybe this one was done through CGI. Couldn't really tell. I mean, some of them you could tell, but certain ones it's like, oh, that's, yeah, that's really cool. I got to give them credit for that. So the film does pass for me. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. I'm going to get it kind of that center point because it could go either way for me. Like, I think this is the type of movie that I have to feel like I'm in the mood to see again.
Yeah.
I enjoyed some parts of it enough to say, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that part again. And there are parts in it that I'd be like, I really don't want to see that one again. So it's either or for me. I'm going to give it right down the middle and give it a 3.
Isn't right down the middle 2.5?
No. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's 2.5.
2.5 is 50% of 5, but 3 is the number in the middle of a set of 5.
Yes, Ben.
I see both points. in terms of a score, I think I'm going to pass this one only on account of its pedigree. Like, if this movie was standing alone and I didn't love Robin Hood so much, I probably wouldn't pass it. Because there was some stuff that was enjoyable, but overall there was a lot that didn't work that should have. Like,
yeah,
it's sort of like, I don't know, like, it was an alley-oop. You just need to, like, make the shot. Like, yeah, all the work is done for you because it's such a familiar story. And I don't think the mistakes are because they were trying to differentiate it and do something new and different. Like, I think it was just they got a little lazy. And they expected your familiarity with it to bridge the gap between shoddy storytelling elements. I liked the look of it overall. I would have recast Ben Mendelsohn in a heartbeat. I don't think he brought anything new to the character, and I don't think he brought anything new to himself as a performer, which was the disappointing beyond belief part for me.
Chad, I'm going to find, I found it, the best of Alan Rickman in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and I'll show it to you afterward off the air, because I'd like for you to see that.
The only redeemable parts of that film.
Exactly.
So I think, though, for me, the last Robin, the last major mass release Robin Hood film was in 2010, so it's been nearly a decade.
Uh-huh.
So keeping the character, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, when you're at a concert and people are throwing the beach ball around and you just got to keep it up off the ground.
Yeah.
And then, like, not every hit has to be epic, but, like, you don't want it to fall. That's the way I am with, like, Robin Hood, King Arthur, some others. Like, just hit the ball back up in the air. Somebody else will make a great play. You just have to keep it from hitting the ground. I think that they kept it from hitting the ground, barely. I don't think it warrants a sequel. I hope they don't make a sequel. But if they did, like, let's say another 10 years from now, mm-hmm. they wanted to tell a different style story and cast Taron Egerton again as Robin Hood because he knows how to shoot a bow and arrow, mm-hmm. I'd be up for it. Mm-hmm. It would totally not rule out, you know, my dollars in the movie theater. In terms of a number, so I'll pass it because of my affinity for the storyline.
Okay.
In terms of monocles, I'd probably give it a 2. I know that seems a bit harsh, but there was a lot of easy stuff that was missed. Like, yeah, just missed opportunities that should not have been missed.
Yeah.
I would rather have you take a risk and miss it than just, like, not have tried on something and miss it, you know? So, for that reason, I'll give it a 2. I'm going to stick to my book series, and we'll see what the next outing has in store for us whenever that happens.
Well, there you go. Well, that about wraps up another awesome review of a film. Let us know what you thought of Robin Hood. Have you had a chance to see it? Are you planning to go see it? Are you going to wait till it comes out on Netflix?
Yeah, do that.
Or Redbox, or a Fox Sunday afternoon movie. Either way, whenever you get the chance, let us know what you thought. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We want to hear your thoughts and how you thought about the film. Just a couple upcoming weekend releases. We got Unstoppable in limited release, Anna and the Apocalypse on limited release, and Head Full of Honey, starring Nick Nolte. It's really a slim week this week. So there was literally
starring Nick Nolte. For the end, didn't you?
I did. So this was awesome. It was a great conversation. And mind you, If you get a chance to see it, we want to hear your thoughts, so let us know. But that about wraps up this awesome episode, and we can't wait to talk to you again next week. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.